This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 157. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
On a very special episode, interviews with Nick Jones Jr. and Billy West from Free Comic Book Day. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, May 22nd, 2011. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. You can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the podcast feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. You can subscribe via iTunes, where you can leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. And as we said at the top of the show, more interviews from Free Comic Book Day. And we do really want to thank Jamie and Teresa at Pack Rat Comics for being nice enough to let us do our show from the big event.
It was really a fun day.
Absolutely. First off, Nick Jones Jr. Now, you may not have heard of him, but he's in the new Green Lantern movie that's coming out in June. And you can kind of guess what his role is in that movie because they haven't made it official yet.
I would say he certainly looks the part.
Yes, absolutely.
I think he's much better cast than Ryan Reynolds, even.
Well, let's find out in our interview with Nick Jones Jr.
First off, did you get a chance to bowl last night?
I didn't.
Oh!
Actually, I went shooting.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I went shooting last night, so that was fun.
What did you shoot? I mean, not what did you shoot at, but what kind of guns did you use?
Oh, man, there was a 308, M16, M4, a bunch of shotguns. I can't recall the names of those things. A couple of handguns we had out there. Fun.
So all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's probably more fun than bowling.
Yeah. Bowling would have been fun, too. I like the bowl. I think I'm okay. I can't curve the ball like everybody can, but right down the middle, I think I got it.
So, can you officially say what your role is in the Green Lantern movie? Because it seems to be going back and forth whether it can be officially announced or not. No comment?
No comment. I still can't officially say.
But you are in
you are
the
in
Green
the
movie.
Lantern. Yes.
Yes. I am there.
So, really, you seem to be the dictionary definition of an overnight success, because you've had roles in several big-time movies in the last 2 years, and how are you handling this newfound fame?
Well, it's a little bit rough, only because I'm still in the Marines, so
right.
I'm active duty, and I can't do as much as I want to do, so
sure.
It's like I'll do something, then I kind of have to go back, you know, do my duty, and then hopefully if they let me, come back out a few months later and try and jump on something else. So
right.
I've been fortunate to, you know, just be able to do what I can at the time that I can do it, and right place, right time for the most part.
Sure, sure. And so essentially you're going on leave and making a movie.
Yeah.
So what are your fellow Marines saying about the Green Lantern movie?
They're looking forward to it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people didn't know who the Green Lantern was until I started telling them about it.
So. Right.
Did you know?
I did. I was a Justice League fan, the cartoon back in the day.
Yeah.
So I grew up on that. So I knew who John Stewart was. I wasn't too familiar with Hal Jordan. And once the movie was first announced, that's when I started, you know, doing some research on that. And once I got the role, bad guy.
Once I got the role of somebody,
you know, I started doing a little bit more research on John Stewart and more of his backstory.
Sure. And so tell me about Weather Wars.
Yeah, Weather Wars. That was a fun movie. Actually,
yeah.
When I was a kid, I wanted to be an FBI agent and went to college for criminal justice and stuff. So I get to play FBI agent Lawson. So it's kind of like a childhood dream in a sense. You know, I got to be able to, you know, portray what I wanted to do. But it's about this scientist who has a deal with the DOD. He loses his funding from the senator that pulls all his funding away from his projects. He leaves, comes back a few years later, vowing revenge. And his two sons are out to get him. Jason London stars as one of the sons. And I'm the FBI agent sent to bring them in because we think that they're the bad guys. So they call me in, and I'm sent out on a manhunt to bring in the sons. It's pretty cool, though.
Cool. So what do you have lined up after Green Lantern at this point?
I got a movie option that we pitched to Sci-Fi Network.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll probably start filming on that later this year or next year, depending on how the slate goes. And I've got accepted to the New York Film Academy. So I'll be learning more of doing stuff behind the camera than in front of the camera.
Right.
That's a goal of mine. And I start next fall with that. And everything else, like I said, since I'm in the military, I can't really plan too far out.
Sure.
So
how
just do what I can.
How much longer do you have as a commitment in the military?
I've got a year and 4 months left.
Okay.
Once I'm out, moving out to L.A., I start school in the New York Film Academy and going from there.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
We're really looking forward to seeing the movie.
Yeah,
so.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
You will enjoy it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again.
All right.
Okay, and our second interview is with Billy West, of course, best known for his work on Futurama, several voices on that show. He was also greatly involved in Ren and Stimpy, Doug, the cartoon series, and a lot of the Warner Brothers cartoons and a lot of other stuff, and you'll hear a lot about that in our interview with Billy West.
Thank you for stopping by.
My pleasure.
So more Futurama's announced. Are you back in the studio yet?
We recorded a season, and there's one premiering.
Right.
And while we're doing that, we're recording another one. And so there's a lot of stuff coming.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. You know, it would have been my favorite show, no matter whether I was part of it or not, because of the writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very surreal that, like, I'll turn on the radio and I hear myself, or watch the TV, or hear my voice come from it. It's very surreal, and I'll never really get used to it. So I try to compartmentalize when I watch Futurama and say, that's not me. I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just want to enjoy it for what it is. And I see John DiMaggio doing Bender, and I go, that's not John. That's not the guy that I was making jokes with that day. When, you know what I mean? Because you want to believe it as well as everybody else does.
So do you watch the episodes as they air? Or?
I've seen them as they air. I've missed a few of them. But because I don't watch TV that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that's probably a weird thing to say, but I watch nature shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it is? I don't want to feel manipulated by television. And I watch the BBC News so I can really find out what's going on in America.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know exactly what I'm saying.
So when you're doing the show, how do you get through all the techno babble on Futurama, especially when you're doing multiple voices at the same time?
Well, it's written down.
Sure.
But in the DVD commentaries,
right.
I don't know anything about anything. And so these guys will be talking technical stuff and the type of animation and the type of computer generation that they're using, and there's tech talk and everything. And I said, I can't even get into this. So what I'll do is just walk in and start complaining about my chair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, can they get a better chair? You know, it's like, because what am I going to say? So you got to have a troublemaker in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad we could make you feel at home with the bad chair.
Right,
then.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I was leading up to
right.
that. So, but, I mean, what else would you be able to do
right.
if you didn't just screw around?
So... how about when you are holding conversations with yourself?
Yes.
And switching characters, you know, literally on the fly. And how does that, how do you make that work?
I always remember the musicality of the characters. Not so much what they sound like, but what their rhythm is.
Right.
And the way their voices lilt and that. And if you remember that, the rest falls into place.
Mm-hmm.
But going from character to character, It's supposed to be hard for people, but it's not for me. That came easy. Because I've read 6 pages of dialogue where it's like all these people
right.
going back and forth.
Sure. So my favorite character on the show is Zoidberg, and you seem to really enjoy voicing him.
Oh, I do. Some of my favorite actors, like Lou Jacoby, And there was a comedian in vaudeville named George Jessel. Mm-hmm. And they all seemed to have a marble mouth. You know, Lizzie Colbert was like, huh? What's it like having all that money? You know, and I was just enthralled with it. So he was a combination of a couple marble mouth people from show business, and it played really well.
So how much were you the development of the voice? Did they tell you what they wanted to hear in the characters?
They tell you what the character's about. And they tell you what they would sort of like to hear you come from, like where, what direction to come from. And then they just say, what do you think? And it's like I deliberate about it. I really do. And I put a lot into those things. And, you know, I had an idea of what I was going to do when I got in there. You know, I was hired for the three other characters besides Fry originally. And then I wound up doing Fry because Fox wasn't happy with the people that they had chosen originally. So, you know, and I remember auditioning for them, but they just liked it, you know.
And that's certainly the character that's closest to your real voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Except that I'm 60. Yeah. And he's 25.
Right.
Or 1,025.
Yeah. Man, all this constant exposure to radiation is making me thirsty.
So, you're considered by many to be the really the heir to Mel Blanc. I mean, you've taken on the role of the Warner Brothers characters. And how does that make you feel?
That's a tough one because the Warner Brothers, all the best work was done before any of us were born. And they always have to have a person to replicate characters for them, but it's not always me.
Sure.
They switch it around, and it's like, that's fine by me because I didn't create it. If someone started to say, yeah, you're not doing that character you created anymore, but someone else is, it's like, then you get a little snorky about it. But the new Mel Blanc stuff, I always thought that the only way you were going to be the next Mel Blanc was by being the best you could be. You know?
Right.
And then it sort of fell in that direction. People started saying that. I met Mel Blanc. I was blown away. Is that an air raid?
Apparently.
The terror alert's up.
God is great. Allah is great. Close the door to the comic book store.
So, I really loved Ren and Stimpy. And is there any chance you see that ever coming back?
You know, they're showing it on TV again.
Right.
And that's always, when they do stuff like that, it's only to test the waters to see if there's a batch of new people that never saw it, that go crazy over it. And they'll bring it back if there's enough response. Mm-hmm. But it may not be something I want to do. Like, they tried to bring it back before, and I had nothing to do with it. I knew what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. I just knew the characters involved, and I knew what they were up to. And I said, you know what? You forgot to be funny. And so, you know what's really cool is, I don't know how cool it is, it's such an egomaniacal thing, but I've been lucky enough to do so many things that have hit. And it's, believe me, it's a lot of luck and it's this, that, and the other thing, but it seems to happen a lot. So I began to say to people, you know, hey, did you do the new Ren and Stimpy? No, I don't do things that suck. I just don't. You know, and maybe one day my luck will run out and I will do something sucky and then I can't say that anymore, but until then.
So what's it like to play candy-coated chocolate?
It's really funny. Because I auditioned for that like almost 15 years ago. Got the part. And the guy who does the yellow M&M, I saw him on a plane going to Hollywood. We both lived in New York. And we were going to go out to Los Angeles to really do a recording session. You know, he was a cool guy and everything. But then since we saw each other since the first time, some time had passed and we got back together to do the ad campaign. He had starred on a show called Oz. It was the prison show on HBO. And he played the worst guy in the prison. The most ruthless, bloodthirsty guy in the prison. And my wife believes that the actor playing this character was the real deal. Because I hadn't seen the show, and she came home. She says, look at this guy. Look at him. Right there. Look at him. That's the real deal. You're not kidding. He's not fooling anybody. He's for real. That's coming right out of him. And I went... She's looking at me like, what? I said, well, I know him.
You do?
I said, yeah, he's the yellow M&M.
So tell me about the grief counselors.
Oh, I played in bands my whole life. You know, like, that's really what I wanted to do, was be, like, the best guitar player in the world. My heroes were guys like Les Paul and Jeff Beck. So there came a time when, you know, they took my spandex license away in 1978. And you don't get it back. So I still was playing as much as I could, but I got into radio and comedy, and it kind of, like, sealed the fate of my musicianship. Although I never stopped playing. But I needed to go back and record stuff that was in my head, or I would forget it.
Right.
So I wrote it all down and went and recorded it. And I did it for myself. I didn't imagine who would like it. I never think like that. But it was just fun for me to do. Mm-hmm. Really fun for me to do, to get it out there, just to get it on CD. And,
right.
Yeah, but I want to do something real one of these days. And I know enough people that I could get a product. Okay. Well, my fillings were just... Yeah.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. So.
This conclude. That is all.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Real fun.
So thanks again to everybody we got a chance to interview, and especially thanks to Jamie and Teresa at Pack Rat Comics for giving us the opportunity to tape the show from Free Comic Book Day. So sorry, no who's on the cover this week, because we're taping this in advance. But we do want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.